Hey everybody, I'm Jody Vance.
And I'm George Affleck.
And it's time for...
Go Canucks Go Unspun!
George, I went to game one last Sunday.
Did you? No way.
I was sitting at a pub with my mom. My mom and Brian and I, we went to the pub just to get mom out and keep her social. She loves a pub. We're sitting at the pub. Brian's phone rings. It's his boss, and he looks and he goes, this is either really good news or really bad news, because it's, you know, and it was really good news because he said, we got two free tickets. Next thing you know, 90 minutes later, we're sitting row 10, section 101, right behind Thatcher Demko. It was great.
All of this means nothing to me, but still.
Okay, well, then I'll tell you that game two, home game two, a couple nights ago, Thatcher Demko was announced as out with an injury. One of the best goaltenders in the league, and our guy. So Casey DeSmith goes in net, played a really good game, but game two we lost. So now it goes back to Nashville. The game's tomorrow. If you're watching this on Thursday when we tape it, tomorrow's the game in Nashville. It's going to be super exciting. Pivotal game three in Nashville for the Vancouver Canucks.
Oh, Vancouver! What is the deal with injuries?
It always happens. It's the playoffs.
In playoffs.
It does.
It's unusual for a goalie to get injured, isn't it?
Nope. Actually, some of the greatest goaltending Stanley Cup winning stories have come from, you know, the Ken Drydens of the world coming in place of the injured goalie. And then, you know, there are a lot of those. And yeah, the guys that step up. For injury, the sportscaster and me could do this for the whole 30 minutes if you want to talk. I mean, is why they play the games, George. Because if on paper,
I get all my sports from you. So
that's
you know,
right.
I don't follow
that's
sports
right.
At all. Although Wrexham got went up a league as well. So maybe Ryan Reynolds should come and take
we
over the Caps.
We are going up, and they're coming to play the Whitecaps.
Oh, really? Oh, that's
they just announced it.
I like the TV show, but I probably wouldn't go to the game. But okay.
Okay, let's talk about things you are interested in, like politics. We're going to get local. We're going to get provincial. We'll get, you know, municipal and then some. But we got to start with Donald Trump, because honestly, I was watching CBC News Network this morning, and almost the entire hour that I watched was U.S. politics, because it's being absolutely consumed with whether it's the E. Jean Carroll ruling again on the defamation, or it's the, you know, when will the January 6th hearing come to be? Will Donald Trump be granted immunity by the U.S. Supreme Court? Are these the document or the Stormy Daniels payoff, the porn star case? I mean, it's just, it's hard to keep track, George.
It's insane. You've got, and the Supreme Court. And it's funny, Jon Stewart was on, he does a Monday night on, it's on Paramount hearing, the Daily Show. It's on Paramount in Canada. And so he's back for Mondays only up until the election, which is great. And he did this thing where he this juxtaposition of all these senior reporters and anchors in the States saying, we've just got to stop doing this reporting of Trump. You know, we're just getting pulled into this, and it's becoming a cue next day. You're like, Trump, same people saying, well, it's a big day. It was a Trump. And you're like, oh my God. It's, they can't get away from it. It's you know, we would talk about spin here. This is the show we talk about. This is just all good for him. It really is. There's no losing. Even if he loses this this trial with Stormy Daniels, it's still a win for him. We've seen it over and over. When he loses, he gains votes. And if he loses, people still, if he wins, it's vindication. And then you've got the whole Supreme Court decision on whether or not he's allowed to shoot people in the head whenever he wants, which potentially makes him a supreme dictator in America.
That's wild. Listening to the Supreme Court actually hear the argument from Trump's lawyer on immunity is fascinating. And I'm no expert at such things. Like, I can barely read my insurance policy for my house. You know what I mean? But it's interesting because they don't show their hand and you think you know where it's going. And then they give a ruling and you're like, oh no, that's where I thought it would go.
Yeah. I was surprised listening to the audio this morning and how aggressive some of the judges were being, you know, to the people, you know, questioning, and it was quite interesting. I've never really listened that much to a Supreme Court hearing in the United States before, but it's all, they're doing it live. And and then they've got the other big issue coming to the Supreme Court on abortion next. So I was like, oh my God.
I listened to that last time that they heard it through, the arguments, and that crazy what 1846 law that was enacted in Arizona that was just flipped today as well. So there is some common sense. Two Republicans joined Democrats to say enough of this insanity. And I also read, albeit on Twitter, but it was an article that there are some more moderate Republicans who are relieved that Donald Trump is stuck in a courtroom right now, because it's just the noise of it. You know, they don't have to face as much of that, you know, day to day. They can get some stuff done.
8 hours of work, but he's stuck in a courtroom, sitting quiet. It's unusual.
He's sleeping and apparently farting. I mean,
that's gross. I'll tell you though, having sat in city council for many years, through a lot of, it's tough sometimes to keep your eyes open. It's like, you know,
I'll never do it.
And some staff are doing these reports, and you're like, yeah.
Try not to yawn. Oh my God. One more US thing before we bring it back here, locally. Harvey Weinstein, his conviction in New York, that whole Me Too, he was like two counts of rape and assault, overturned by appeals court, the highest court in the state, looked at it and said, no, because they allowed witnesses from other past wrongdoing, something or other. Anyways, and it was a panel of women. So the people that would be like, bunch of old white guys doing that, actually, no, it was a panel of women judges who looked at it and said, no, and it's a little bit shocking. I feel for the victims for sure, because the last thing anybody needs is more of this. And then you turn the page on the story and it's like, but he'll be going to Los Angeles to serve his 9 years in prison in LA for the crimes he did there that he are still standing. So interesting, though, how he just came strolling into court today, where when he was
in a wheelchair.
No,
really, because the last images, he was all aged and
he looked like, yeah. Back here at home, George, let's start municipal. Let's start in Vancouver, and then we'll go to Surrey, and then we'll go further along if we can.
Guess what you might bring up. Let me think. That's what's something we talk about a lot.
I think.
Park board.
What is happening? Own goal, I'll call this.
Oh, my God. Well, it's just like this one. I don't even understand it. There's like the city council decided to try and change the role, who decides that becomes a general manager of the park board. It used to be the decision of the park board. They decided that that's not the case. And it was slipped in some other reports. All very curious and strange. And I guess from a spin point of view, why is Ken Sim doing this to himself? Why is he torturing himself? Why is he, you know, you had a massive majority on all levels of government municipally. You then decide to dismantle it without actually the support of your commissioners on park board. So now you started this shit show, a party that's clearly not united. And now they're doing these things. It's like, why would you're doubling down when it doesn't look like EB's going to make any quick decision on this provincially. So we're not going to hear about this until maybe after the fall election. Maybe with some miracle he'll decide. But is he going to decide in favor or against? I just don't understand why you'd be wasting so much time on this and then doing these little sneaky things that just get the people who are already rabid supporters of the park board just all fired up. I mean, John Cooper, you know, I'm not saying wrong, he's pretty rabid on this one. But, you know, he's former chair and he was running for mayor and this kind of stuff just makes him nuts, because he does truly, truly believe in the independence of the park board. You know, obviously we've made our statements about this and our feeling about this. It's not about, it's just incompetence for multiple years that we're against.
Totally. I had no problem with the park board until the park board started failing miserably for years on end, wasting money, not getting it done, rendering parks unusable, and micromanaging in places and spaces that were counterintuitive to what the people who pay the taxes that pay for the parks could use it for. And there was no way of stopping it because they had an agenda. And it was a time when John Cooper was very much in the minority and fighting against that very agenda. So when I say I'm pissed off at the park board, I'm not saying I'm pissed off at John Cooper. I'm a little upset with him because he's coming at me when I continue to have an opinion about this, because he liked it when I was on his side. You know what I mean? but I think there's some middle ground to be found here, and that's not going to be found with these sort of you know, we're going to remove the ability for the park board to elect its general manager. No, you know what? Let's focus on what needs doing. Have you driven through Stanley Park? I do like the fact that they put fencing up around Sunset Beach on 420. You know, that was a surprise. Why haven't we done that in years past?
Yeah,
because we had a park board that was politically motivated over park motivated. Having that park protected so that it wouldn't be closed for people to sit on and play on because it was wrecked by the people.
Yeah.
Like,
mm-hmm.
This is common sense, my friend. This is the absolute.
That,
it's the reason we do Unspun. There is a conversation to be had that doesn't pick a side. The fact that we get accused that we're picking a side because we keep coming down the middle on this, particularly this, it's like, fix the parks. You'll find nobody is mad at you if you fix the parks.
Well, we ask. And that's why I don't understand why Kenson would throw away and waste all this time when he had a massive majority, could have got stuff done that we needed to get done, and decisions could be made, and movement could be done really, really quickly. And now they're all caught up in the quagmire of this.
I mean, do we need another task force? Apparently we do.
That's right. And this is about the city, because the city's appointed a task force to implement the budget recommendations from the committee that was 5 months late and probably two tax terms late. I mean,
yeah.
So it's made up of three councillors, all ABC councillors. And that's great. That's good that they have some kind of way to make sure the stuff in the report get done. I don't think any of them have any accounting experience or budget experience.
That's the part that kind of concerns me. But
yeah,
they would have experts around them if they were to say, hey, where's that line item? They could go to city staff, and the city staff would then.
Is that what they're going to do? Because to me, I didn't see that in the report. Okay, you're going into your third budget soon. It's almost summer. You're working, their staff are already working on the next budget. We've had two massive, massive budgets, way beyond the rate of inflation. And you know, we've talked about this. They've got 2 years left of their term. If they don't bring in a 4-3-2% budget the next two terms, or next 2 years, they are in big trouble.
Big
and this
trouble.
Unite the right in Vancouver and give the left a reason to say, see, doesn't matter. You bring in this party that, you know, they promised this and promised that, and they didn't get their house in order. And they haven't. They haven't got the house in order. They haven't done enough change.
The roof's still leaking.
They didn't make decisions quickly that you have to do. That first year, they should have just gotten rid of all the waste. Like, do it. Now you can't because those people will become political. Instead, you go off and do park board stuff, and you put a committee to get together that takes you a year and a half to bring a report that really didn't tell you what to do. And now we have three counselors who are going to make sure whatever that sort of mediocre report provided, done. Okay, great. Sure. Can you just get my taxes down to 4% or 3%, please? I can't afford everything in this city and this country right now. It's insane.
It is. It really is. And if you and I are struggling, imagine the people who are truly like living on the poverty line or below it.
Yeah. I mean,
and we're not wealthy people. I don't say that as somebody but I definitely have enough, you know?
You know,
and I'm
bad.
Feeling the pinch. I used to go into the grocery store and buy what I wanted and leave. Yeah. Now I go in the grocery store and I pick up a lime and go, wow, 99 cents? Maybe I don't need a lime.
You know, Amanda does most of the shopping, I got to admit, because I do all the other things. But I don't really pay attention to these things. And she comes home and says, these green peppers were like $8. You're like, what?
Potatoes.
I'm like,
potatoes
what?
Are $8. Grapes are 10. Blueberries? I mean, anyway, we're going into growing season. So we'll farmers market. Well, farmers market the hell out of it. You want to talk about who's probably, sorry?
Growing my beans on the roof.
Growing your beans. Oh, I'll have some of those, please.
Yeah, they're...
Let's go to Surrey now. Oh my God. Just when you think the saga couldn't continue, it does. Unbelievable. So this week, Solicitor General Mike Farnworth does what many of us are asking why he didn't do it a year ago, and why it's going to be not until the end of November, but he has put a date of transition from police of jurisdiction, right? So right now, the RCMP, Surrey RCMP, are the POJ, the police of jurisdiction in Surrey, right?
Mm-hmm.
The goal is to transition to Surrey Police Services, the municipal police, and then they will become the police of jurisdiction. And there is like a water line where one becomes the other in terms of numbers of officers and deployed officers and cars. It's quite complicated. Believe me, I know more about it than I wanted to. And so here we go. Got the date. November 29th. It's happening. Well, Mayor Brenda Locke reacts to Mike Farnworth saying that. And she's saying things like he's being very aspirational because we've seen no plan from him and there's been no transition. And I'm listening to this on NW and I'm thinking to myself, there's no plan because you won't look at it. There's no transition because you won't do it. There's no because you blocked it at every turn. It's $8 million a month for Surrey taxpayers extra right now, has been for years, $8 million a month. And then she's talking about how much it's going to be with Surrey Police, and it's this Deloitte report. Have you heard about this Deloitte report?
Well, the one that said that it would be like $40-50 million, and then was projected.
Yes, that one. Yeah. So then there are three numbers apparently. Here's the number because Deloitte's independent, right?
I think I'm counting for two, by the way. Once we get you do your numbers, I'll throw in mine.
So there was one for the RCMP, one for the SPS, both at the same number of officers per vehicle, whatever it is. And then there's another one that is a growing Surrey Police Service because city's growing and the whole point, sorry, Siri thinks I'm talking to Siri. So everything's growing. So the third number is obviously the larger number with a marked increase in staff and deployment. Mm-hmm. So of course, Brenda Locke, the mayor of Surrey, is taking that largest possible number and using it as this is what it's going to cost to have SPS.
And what's that larger number?
I believe it was something in the ballpark of $725 or $745 million over 10 years.
Per year.
Per year. By the 10th year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it would grow to that is what she was saying.
Well, yeah, and it's possible. I think it's a bit beyond. I mean, Vancouver's budget, they're projecting it to be $468 million by 2028. So that would be a good number to go by. If we're similar size cities, you know, with a similar cost, that's a good number to probably be safe to say. And I would say that would likely be the real number, about $500 million by, say, 2030 per year. That's a good number to go by. But $280 million is not correct for sure. And $700 million is probably a bit outside the pale, but, you know, unless they really want to ramp up their police. But I think, you know, her point, obviously, is to block this thing and scare the taxpayers.
That's right.
And certainly help the opposition to NDP in those communities to think about who they're going to vote for in October. And I think it is working for them. For anybody else is working for, it's potentially the BC United and Conservative candidates to say that NDP have screwed this up. The mayor is trying to fight the fight for the local taxpayers. If it had been us, we wouldn't have done this. We would have found a better way. You know, they won't have a solution, but they'll say that. And, you know, you can't trust this government kind of thing. So that's going to be the election campaign. So it's a gift from Brenda Locke. And maybe it's an intentional one. Maybe she's cahoots with them. I don't know.
It certainly sounds like it. It's feeling like it's not really about the Surrey taxpayer as much as it is about making the provincial government, I don't even know if it's look bad is the right way to put it, just as I'm saying that. I think it's a way to be as adversarial as possible. I think it's really personal now. Or she's got people in her ear who would prefer the NDP lose. It's one of the other.
You and I interviewed Mike Farnworth. He's not the lovable bear, you know, he's a hard ass. So
I found him really nice, to be honest with you. Yeah. But maybe it's because his partner watches Steel and Vance and he seemed very normal and human and very, very well prepared with what, you know, he's made sure that these decisions involve people who have done the job. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't get the feeling that the mayor of Surrey, with all due respect, has ever done any policing in her life. I don't get the feeling that she has. No. I like the idea of what you said about the VPD and what Surrey Police Service is and what other municipal police forces will eventually meld together, work on the same systems and be a provincial police. I think that's where, if I was sitting in the premier's office, that would be what I would start talking about, because it does take municipal police forces to form a provincial police. Like, after living in Ontario, it makes a lot of sense. What's happening with the RCMP, the way it's deployed, the way officers show up, they don't even know their way around the city. Yeah. When they're recruited to here. So, I mean, there are some real, and that's, I've got very, very close family friends of mine who are high level RCMP, have great respect for the work they do. That is not a knock. And it's become that. If you're either SPS or you're RCMP and you can't, it's like.
This is a debate about money. And what Brenda Locke should do, if she's spending that much money per month, she can get a poll, she can do a referendum for $10 million in Surrey, do a referendum, do ask a simple question. Would you be willing to pay more than $400 million a year for police?
Yes or no? Just say, Surrey Police, RCMP.
Yeah.
Which do you choose? If you put that out, but you know what? She wouldn't do it, in my opinion, because she'd be afraid to get the answer.
I don't think anybody wants that.
Right?
Maybe.
Right?
Who knows?
But it's too late.
I was involved in a referendum. I did the No Pro Rep campaign,
which
started at 30% and we came out at 61%. We did a good campaign. We won. So referendums can be very, you know, depending on who's better at running a campaign.
Yeah.
I think Bill Thielman's pretty involved with the keeping the RCMP, correct? I think, which is interesting because he's an NDPer. But he's been quite involved, I think. He was, at least, very vocal about keeping the RCMP. Maybe he's pulled back now because of the NDP. I don't know. But I seem to recall that. So there's people that are, you know, can get involved and change the course of that. You know, but hey, you know what? It puts it to bed. You know, just, you have to accept it. It's a problem.
Has to be binding, though.
Like, what do the people want?
But non-binding referendums are just a waste.
Yeah.
Agreed. They're just a waste, you know? Mm-hmm. And do a binding referendum on the park board. Do a binding referendum on, you know what I mean? Like, if you truly want to know what people think, but then you've got to actually get people to come out and vote. Because when Brenda Locke said, all the people in Surrey have spoken and they want to stay with the RCMP or whatever, and then Jazz goes to break, opens phones, and every single caller is like, get rid of her.
Wow.
It's over. Move on. Mm-hmm. It's Surrey. We're police. We want Surrey police. Like, it was.
We want policing. Just get to work.
No, they actually were like, we're done with Brenda Locke. We're done with this. It's taking up too much noise.
Like, yeah, but yeah. It's just like us in the park board saying, like, just
totally
do your job.
That's my point. Yeah. Exactly my point. Yeah.
Just one more thing, though. I just think that on the referendum thing, though, yeah, you're right. It should be binding, but it also should be at a percentage that's higher than 50%. And you need to have a minimum vote turnout. Because the thing is,
that
Locke's argument is saying, you know, I was voted in and I said I was going to do this and I'm doing it. So, and you know, the predecessor did the exact opposite of the same thing of why he'd get rid of the RCMP. So, I always argue referendums are not a good solution. Elections are the solution. That's the real referendum. But if you're in this situation where you have this, no, you can't figure the future, then a binding referendum, as you say, a certain percentage have to show up and a certain percentage has to, you know, beyond 60% to really make it clear of what the people really want, and a clear, simple question, like you mentioned, like just yes or no, which one?
Doesn't help that South Surrey White Rock right now has random attacks happening down on the boardwalk. You know, one person stabbed and then one person fatally stabbed. And a warning from that city's mayor to say, everybody be vigilant. It's like, we should be spending less of our energy talking about the politics of policing and addressing the fact that we have, you know, 725 people covering all of Surrey. You know, it's
actually an advertisement to criminals. Oh, I can probably work around that.
Right. I mean, what else do we want to talk about? With our just a couple minutes to go here.
A little mountain groundbreaking. Yeah. Mountain, it's a rehash of a press release kind of thing, but this is something that's been going on forever. Little Mountains, for those who don't know, is a sort of top of the city in Vancouver, and it was this whole process. It was a lot of social housing there, and pretty bad repair, old, and it was all shut down, torn down. It got one building replaced, and it's been in this limbo because the developer who bought it from the province was also built the Trump Tower, and then that was expensive, and just hasn't been able to afford to do the stuff he wanted to do up there. So now he's getting involved and starting to get mandate stuff in the city, and so they're getting stuff done, but it's still all piecemeal. It was supposed to be a whole planned community built over 10 years, and that was in 2008.
It's a lot of empty lots up there right now.
Huge site. Huge.
And some prime real estate. Like there was a time with us born and raised Vancouverites that was the bad part of town. And it's definitely not the bad part of town now.
No, you're right by Queen's Park. Beautiful area.
Yeah.
Beautiful
and
area.
It's got elementary schools and high schools and parks and community centers, and like the infrastructure exists for that density. It's something else. You know, we're seeing the density on the west side. That huge tower at Broadway and Granville is sort of the beginning of that, you know, Broadway plan and the Broadway line. Fourth and McDonald, there are a couple of big towers going in there. One really big, awesome rental, low income rental tower that's going in. It's going to invigorate.
Going right over here across from me on Broadway. Big tower right over there.
But I'm looking forward to, you know, people walking around on the streets instead of just driving in and out of town. I'm looking forward to standing in line at the produce shop. I did note one thing about, I went out to Tawasin this week to get my hair done. And they are all up in arms in Tawasin about 23 story towers going in just as you come in to Tawasin, at 56th and 16th, I think it is.
First Nations land, or is it?
No, it's development land that's like right 23 story buildings in a place where there are no buildings over four stories, like not one. So they're losing their minds in Tawasin right now. Oh, where are people going to go? There's no hospital. There's only one high school.
There's a hospital, Ladner. Just never open.
They
have an emergency room.
They do. And I'm so grateful for people at Delta Hospital, man. I'm never going to diss that. But that's a whole region of people that have grown really, really quickly. And so, but it's interesting about the size. Like, I was surprised. I hadn't heard much about it. Anyways, I thought I'd toss that out there.
It's so short. I got a 46-story building being built next to me. It's going to take another 5 years before they're finished it.
Really?
When I was in Morocco, there's the mosque in Casablanca. It's on the ocean, and it's insane, right? Huge, huge, huge mosque right on the ocean, built on the ocean. It took them 2 years to build it. 2 years?
Wow.
To fund it and build it. Here we are. It takes me five years in Vancouver just to build it, but it, you know, 10 years to get the permits and all that stuff to build anything.
That's the wild part, right? Like, we're never going to get to the housing that we need in this city, in this metro, in this lower corner of the province. And then you think about, even if it was all permitted and fast-tracked, think about this building season and how many skilled workers are needed in West Kelowna. Right.
Yeah.
The entire side of the lake was taken out by fire. Don't you think everybody there is going to want to build their things back? Yeah, they will.
Which is an argument for when we talk about immigration policies, which, you know, we're really challenged by it. People are complaining about it, and it's going to get a hot button issue in the federal election. But if we focus and bring skilled workers who are construction workers, for example, which we need a lot of to build the kinds of, you know, we've got announcements from Trudeau to build so much housing.
Yeah.
Well, it's not like you wave a wand. There's not only the money, there's also the who's going to build these things, who's going to develop it, is it private, public, all that process. But bare minimum, somebody's got to hammer the nails and pour the concrete. Otherwise, it's all pointless.
Yeah. Well, robot. On that cheery note.
Bring on the robots. Bring on the AI. It'll do it for us. Maybe AI politicians,
that's right,
too.
Weren't we going to 3D print our houses a few years ago? Wasn't that a thing?
Yeah. Modular housing, though. They're like the like Lego ones. They work quite well. But we don't allow them because of our earthquake rules. So
what's that?
We don't allow a lot of that stuff because of our earthquakes that we never have.
Really? The containers are dangerous in the earthquake situation?
They certainly don't meet the long term. That's why they're temporary modular housing.
Right.
Because they're not permanent. So they get around the regulations on the city regulations on housing in it. But they wouldn't be allowed to be permanent. So yeah, you can't, I think I talked about this last week, my friend in a laneway house, 4 years.
That's crazy.
Because you have to put that stupid pathway from the laneway house. Like,
I don't understand.
A concrete pathway.
Who created those specs, and what year were they put in? I think there should be a grandfathering of, like, the reverse of grandfathering. It should be, if a city bylaw was created before 1986, it should be reopened and readdressed.
Yeah.
It just should.
There's a referendum. We get a list of all the bylaws and we all say stupid. We just all
no,
that's
no.
dumb. That's stupid. Ridiculous.
If you like that idea, reach out to us. You can find us on Twitter. You are at George
underscore.
Underscore Affleck. George underscore Affleck. I'm at Jody Vance. Jody with a Y, at Jody Vance. Longest running political podcast in British Columbia. Or at least that's what we're telling our children. This is Unspun Podcast, unspunpodcast.com. Follow us also on your Twitter and give us story ideas if something's happening in your municipality. We want to talk about it. You know what? Next week, we'll probably still be talking about, what is it, 17 mayors who wrote a letter about Picton not getting parole. It's like, are we actually doing this? Like, Schoenborn wants to change his name and Picton wants parole. Come on.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you're not even taking us back. You were trying to end on a high there.
We were. But, I mean, these are the types of stories we will ultimately, but we had to start with part four today. We just had to. Thanks.
Yes. All right, see you next week. Bye.